Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone. Welcome to Orlando Entrepreneurs. My name is Josh, and I'm the podcast show host of this show. And I get to go around and talk with entrepreneurs and the people who support the entrepreneurial community here in Orlando. And I'm really excited to today to interview a guy who has helped build the Orlando entrepreneurial scene. All right. He's one of our advisory board members for Orlando Entrepreneurs. He's helped build a lot of the communities here. And I'm going to let you just hear his story from his mouth. So, ladies and gentlemen, fellow entrepreneurs, welcome Rupert Megnott to the show. Rupert, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Man, it is absolutely awesome. How are you doing?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, man. So this is a guy that we're talking to who helped start the Orlando entrepreneurial scene. Why don't you give us an idea of who you are, Rupert, and how you got started?
Well, I don't know if I helped start it, but I definitely gave it a little kick here and there. I came down here in 86 to get my MBA at Rollins, and I worked full time and went to school full time. And so my second year, my first year, I was had a partnership with a publishing company, and but my second year, I went to work at Martin Marietta Missiles and Electronics doing project management work, and that really went well. They just kept renewing my contract and so on and so forth. And then after that, I had a went and worked for a property management company, and then I had a patent, and then and consumer electronics, and I'm a poli sci major, by the way. Go figure. And so I tried to get that going. And then when that failed rather miserably because of the 1992, the big recession that we had back then, which was, you know, it impacted us on the entrepreneurial side of things just as great as the 2008 one did. And so I had the rug pulled out from under me. I had no income for 2 years. I was, you know, $250,000 in debt, living in a $400 a month apartment, and it was right there. I mean, I had 5,000 units. It was a holder for remote controls that beeps when you lose it. So you take your VCR and your CD player remote control, and it goes in and it snaps shut. And then if you lose it, you clap your hands and it beeps, you know, so you can find it. We did a market test, and the market test was to sell 500 units in a month, and we sold 1,503. And they were just like, the marketing company was just going absolutely bonkers. And I needed the last $50,000 from my investor. And then he was in the automotive industry. That got hit really hard back then too. And so he's basically said, nope, ain't coming. And so I was like, what am I going to do? And then all my friends were, and then, you know, that was a really traumatic experience. However, all my friends at the time, I was running this thing called the Central Florida Council for High Technology, as well as the Florida Venture Group, which was a group of entrepreneurs that was meeting once a month, and we were basically showcasing various entrepreneurs and so on and so forth in town. And they just said, hey, Rupert, you know, we know this is tough, but, you know, you raised capital, you wrote a business plan, you did product development and very, you know, electrical and mechanical, all this other stuff. And you know, you did all these fantastic things for yourself. Can you do it for us? And I said, well, yeah, I guess. And then Virtual Entrepreneur was born. And 3 years later, I was debt-free, including my new house. So I figured I must be doing something right. And just helped, hundreds of companies in the meantime, the vast majority in Central Florida, but everything from mom and pop frame it shops all the way up to Fortune 100 companies. But, I don't really like working with the big companies because they just don't get the mindset, and they can't react and work in a manner that's conducive to, you know, risk-taking and initiative that entrepreneurship thrives in. So I love working with entrepreneurs, you know, especially aspiring entrepreneurs. because I just don't want them to make the same mistakes that myself and other people made, that can be traumatic and so forth. So that's it in a nutshell. To make a long story long.
Okay, so let's go back to this, because this is, you said a few things that really stand out that perked my ears. You were $250,000 in debt. The market, you know, was really going rough. You had a great idea, just really bad timing. But what people saw is that you were doing something very well for yourself, and they said, "Can you help us with it?" And then fast forward 3 years later, out of debt, debt-free, home paid for. Like, there's a lot in that 3 year period that, you know, I'd like to, you know, learn more from you and share with the community if you're able to and willing to.
Oh, sure.
What are some of the things that you did and learned during that time frame?
Well, back then we called it hustle. Here we call it grind. I was sticking my nose in everybody's business and basically being very proactive and letting them know that, look, the reason why companies fail is because of bad management. And, I'm humbly offering my wisdom and experience and creativity to help you manage your startup better so that you do it right the first time and don't go through the BS that me and many others have gone through, you know. So that's basically what I did. And of course I was already networked in because I was running the two biggest entrepreneurial groups in town. So, you know, that was kind of easy. And I was also working for, I was a volunteer for the Small Business Development Center. In fact, I have somewhere around here, I have a certificate that says that I was basically the first certified business analyst in the state of Florida from February 1995. So, I was already tied in, so it wasn't too hard to network and find aspiring entrepreneurs and established entrepreneurs for that matter. Some of whom are, you know, quite established today, that I was able to help at that point in time, at a crucial point in time, and you know, move forward.
So before the word entrepreneur was a big hit word, you started a company called Virtual Entrepreneur, which was your consultancy. What year did you begin that?
September of 92.
September of 92. Wow. And you're a part of what you did for a company is you helped people manage their startup, and you also did a bunch of other things as a consultant. What are the other things that you were really good at doing for yourself and for others?
Well, like I said, I focused on project management, and, you know, it's pretty much like everything else. People will call themselves something that's trendy. And so a lot of people call themselves and, you know, with all due respect to people who consider themselves project managers, I mean, technically we are all project managers, because a project is a temporary endeavor undertaken to create a unique product, service, or result. So, you know, putting your clothes on in the morning is a project. But the thing is, you know, people just don't understand the basics. It's like, you know, I'm in the game industry, as you know, and everybody's so enamored with Scrum and Agile development, and yet they just totally ignore, you know, the fundamentals of project management, so which drastically hampers their ability to be good project managers in Agile or Scrum, as well as, you know, all the other project management disciplines like Six Sigma and so forth. So in any case, to answer your question, people just don't understand what good project management is about. And without the fundamentals, it's just like martial arts or anything else. If you don't know how to fall, then good luck being a good martial artist, right? If you don't know how to take a punch, if you don't know how to, you know, maintain your balance and so forth, it's very difficult. So in starting a business, the things that you have to understand is, you know, an entrepreneur is a person who establishes and operates an enterprise based on two things, risk and initiative. The initiative part is fairly easy. A lot of it involves resilience because you got to get up every morning and dust yourself off and get back to it and then just, You know, if you, entrepreneurs should be really good at seeing opportunities that other people don't see, and they'll be able to chase those opportunities with gusto. That's where the risk comes in, because if you're trying to start a business, it's a really risky enterprise. It's a really risky endeavor. It's like people just don't understand. I mean, I've seen people, and you know, I won't talk about these things, but I've seen people lose their marriages, their homes, their 401ks, their retirements, and unfortunately their lives, you know, pursuing their dream of being a successful entrepreneur without really being understanding the risks involved and the initiative that was necessary and the resilience that's absolutely crucial. So, you know, that's what I try to impart to people, but I do it through project management, because 80% of project management is planning. And anybody worth their salt, you know, every successful entrepreneur knows fail to plan, plan to fail. So that's what I did through those years, is helping these companies plan their success. But, you know, and so I was charging a lot of money to help people write their business plans and so forth, and then showing them to investors. And then I had this thing, the Florida Venture Group, where the investors knew that they were going to see good investable companies present every month. Here you go to competitions and things like that, and I see the companies that win or whatever, and I'm like, well, that's nice, but they would not have been invested in back in the 90s, you know. And there's so many great startups here in town that really, I mean, they could be potential unicorns if they just knew what they were doing a little bit better. I'm not putting down anybody. I mean, I think what the incubators and everybody else in town is doing is fantastic. Please keep doing, you know, the good work and keep getting these companies going. The only thing I would add, though, is that we're not teaching companies to be sustainable. We're just focused on starting companies. We're not focusing on growing companies. So that would be my two cents on that. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, I think you did. So I think people in the audience, are, as they're listening, they're going, okay, so, you know, maybe could you give us one or two pieces of advice for what the foundation of project management looks like? Maybe could you give one or two things that could help entrepreneurs out there start thinking more about their startup and their project management and management of risk?
Well, the first thing that people need to understand is that management is one thing and one thing only. It's processes. Absolutely. That's all management is. Whether it's scope management, you know, the work and how it's done, whether it's schedule management, whether it's budget management, whether it's quality management, whether it's human resource management or communications or risk or quality or any one of, you know, any of these things or stakeholder management, it's all processes. And if you do not plan your processes, and when I say plan, it's not in your head, because I don't care how genius you are, you're not going to be able to plan everything. And you know, you're still going to be reactionary instead of proactive as an entrepreneur. And when you get reactionary as an entrepreneur, that's when you fail. So, you have to have a document, literally a document. Take your plans, write them all down, and then now everybody, all the stakeholders, can literally be on the same page, right? So that drastically reduces miscommunications and bad feelings and all these other things that go on that help companies fail. So just plan it. And if I might say this, when I was writing plans in the early to mid 90s, you know, these were 150 page business plans with 300 to 400 pages of appendices. Okay. So you were talking $10,000-$20,000 to do these things, right? And that's what it took for a company to get invested back then. Right. And you know, that's how Milcom got invested, and that's how all these other companies got raised capital and so forth. So, then we had in the late 90s that dropped down to about a 75 to 100 pages, and you know, plus 100. Then 2001 hit literally, and it dropped down again to like 50 pages and maybe 50 pages of appendices. And then 2008 hit. It's really interesting how all these recessionary or these financial hits in the these hits to the financial community are almost dumbing down the ability to create a company. And the so 2008 hit, and then it dropped to like 25 pages and maybe 25 pages of appendices. And then Ash Maurya and all these other guys came along with lean startup tech methodology and business model canvas and so forth. And now it's just a business model canvas. If you do a business model for canvas, you can create a pitch deck and you can raise millions of dollars. Right. And so to me, that's just, I don't know, the people that have more money than brains are the ones that are really running the show, basically. You know, they're just investing in stuff because it's cool, because they get sold on it, and then their friends, oh, my friend invested $500,000, I'll invest $1 million, you know, and then they fail, and they wonder why, and, you know, don't even get me started on the venture capital model. I think it's totally broken. But in any case, so number one, management is processes. And plan to fail, fail to plan to fail. Those are the only really two things that you need to know as an entrepreneur. But I will add this, though, that it all depends on your stakeholders. Absolutely. Everything depends on your stakeholders. You're not a one-person show. And the team comes first. So the processes involved in being successful as an entrepreneur or as a project manager, you know, because starting a business is one of the most difficult of projects that people don't really understand. You know, they don't call us the 1% for nothing. Right. And so what you have to understand is the process involved is, first of all, identifying all your stakeholders. Okay. These are every single person or organization that is interested in your project or your business, and it could be positive or negative interest, influential over your business or project, again, positive or negative. They could be impactful, and then, of course, they're involved, right? So obviously, the easiest ones are the ones that are involved. Obviously, you're involved, but your spouse is involved. Your kids are involved, right? You know, your other family members may be involved. I mean, because you're working 80, 90 hours a week to get your company started is going to be impacting these people. And they're going to have influence over those things and so forth. Every single person that's when those four eyes, what I call the four eyes, those are people that are stakeholders. And so the first thing is you identify who they are. And then the next thing is you collect what we call NWEs, their needs, wants, and expectations. And you collect those and you just pull them all together, and then you prioritize them into your objectives, your requirements, and then the exclusions, which you can't, just don't have the time or money to deal with. So the beauty of that is now at the very least, if you've got stakeholders that have NWEs that you're not using, at least they know that you seriously considered them, that you had the respect of them and the love for them to collect those needs, wants, and expectations and to consider them, and then say, hey, version two, right? We'll come back to you with version two. And then the other ones will know that their needs, wants, and expectations have become requirements for your success, right? So, and by achieving those requirements for your success, your objectives automatically get achieved. And then that's how you become successful. And from a project management point of view. And, you know, I know people that I've consulted with companies that were like saying doing 10 million a year, and they're breaking their arms, patting themselves on the back, saying how great they were. And then, you know, I look at their books and I look at other things and I'm like, how are these guys still in business? Right. And then I go in there and I help them with all their projects and their processes and everything else. And the next year they're doing 25 million and they're like, what the heck? Right. It's like, well, hey, you know, it's processes and it's management and it's documentation and it's planning not to fail. And so if you're just thinking of starting a business and starting getting out there, do not underestimate the power of planning. And again, it's just doing a damn business model canvas, for crying out loud. Oh, and by the way, do a good business model canvas. There's a business model canvas that many people in this town are using that, to me, I find is not only worthless, but it's actually harmful. So, you know, find a good business model canvas. I do have one, though I don't really want to plug it, so to speak, shameful plug or anything, but I've created my own, but you know, that's the one that I use for the people that I work with.
Awesome. Is there any place where people can find this business model canvas? That do you have a downloadable version of it, or could people reach out to you to get a copy of it?
Well, you know, I've been working like a dog, and so I don't get out much, except my girlfriend, you know, much to her chagrin. But one thing that I've implemented was this My Meal with a Mentor program. I don't know if you've heard about it, but I've had over 120 so far, where aspiring entrepreneurs, they you know, take me out to breakfast, lunch, or dinner. You know, I'm an easy date. You know, just take me out to breakfast, lunch, or dinner, and I'll give you an hour of my time. And then typically I, you know, people who I meet with have never even heard of a business model canvas. And so I say, I give it to them for free. I say, here, this is my, and it's got plenty of, you know, context built into it, is, you know, and instructions and so forth and questions. And then, but the thing is the vast majority of people that I talk to they're not entrepreneurial material. Okay. They're not willing to put forth the work that it's necessary to be successful. And yeah, so what? So they make $100,000 their first year or whatever, and they're breaking their arm, patting themselves on the back. And I'm like, okay, well, let's see if you're still around next year. Right. You know, because if you're not planning this stuff, I mean, the average startup in this town only lasts 8 months, for crying out loud. So it's like, you know, it's because they're not doing good project management.
Wow, that is, so two things. Number one, I think your Meals with a Mentor is a great idea. For those listening in, you know, I encourage you to, you know, reach out to Rupert maybe through LinkedIn and see if you could get on his schedule in the future. You know, I'm definitely going to do it, Rupert. I'll take you out to coffee, lunch, or dinner, or cocktail, and would love to hear your thoughts on this. But something else that you said, the mortality rate in the average startup last 8 months here, is that right?
That's from all the observations that I've been making over the last couple of years, yeah.
Wow. Okay. So which kind of like segues us into what are you doing now? Talk to us about your venture.
When I was doing Virtual Entrepreneur back in the mid-90s, a lot of people don't realize that Orlando is the world center for modeling and simulation, and which brings in currently about $6 billion into the local economy. And so in 1992, the government did these BRAC, these base closures and other types of cutbacks that really affected the simulation community here. So quite a few of them were actually hiring me to come in and help them find tech transfer or new revenue streams for their intellectual property. And so I would go in and I'd take a look at their, what their IP was. And then I would create like dozens of different ideas as to what they could do with it. And then we would pick one or two, and then I'd write the business plan for it. And then we'd raise the capital, and then we'd go out and then we'd rock and roll. And I was working for one company that they're still around, and they had electromechanical motion systems that would make the flight simulator move, right? The vast majority of flight simulators out there actually do not move. So, but it was based on technology that at the time was 70 years old. You know, when Edwin Link created the first electromechanical or the first pneumatic motion system, that was back in the 20s. And so I felt I could build a better mousetrap. So I got with an engineer, and we designed and patented a new system that I thought was ready for the 21st century, and created Simulation Entertainment Group, and, you know, basically went from there. And while we were doing that, I was looking at the entertainment market, because the location-based entertainment market was exploding like no other business I've ever seen, including the internet. And I mean, it was, we went from 350 arcades or family entertainment centers in 1990 to 20,000 in 2000. So in 10 years, it averaged nearly over 6,500% growth per year in that industry. And so we were going gung-ho with our simulation systems into that industry, which, and so we needed, content for our simulators, so that, you know, kids and adults or whoever going to these family entertainment centers would put their $5 in there and go on a 5-minute experience. And so I did deals with, you know, Hasbro Interactive and Infograms and other, some of the other bigger companies at the time, and ultimately decided to create our own games. And so we hired, you know, developers, and we created our own games. And then towards, when was it? In 2001, I was hired by UCF to teach entertainment technology for the Rosen College, which was just getting started. And I was working with those guys to help them get the school rocking and rolling. And then in 2008, Full Sail contracted me to hired me to help them with their new game design master's degree program, and teaching project management doing that. So I taught that for 6 years, and, you know, my former students, of which are now helping manage several $1 billion in game IP. So I'd like to think I know what I'm doing. And so then I'm looking at my other compatriots in the program, and they all have businesses, and they're using students, and they're doing this and that and so forth. And I looked at the game industry, and I was like, you know, this industry is 40 years old, but it's still embryonic. It's doing $100 billion a year, and it's still in its infancy, which is mind-boggling to me. Because the biggest thing is education. Our educational system, we spend more than anybody else probably combined, and yet we're 28th in the world. And we're the worst education system, you know, in the developing world. Same thing for our healthcare system, but we won't talk about that yet. But so I'm like, the reason why is that we don't have games in the classroom, because all these kids are growing up with games, they're growing up with computers, they're growing up with tablets and iPads and everything else. And, you know, my wife's grandsons, you know, at 3 years old, they're like grabbing the iPad out of my hand and saying, you know, and start playing stuff. And I'm like, what the hell, right? So we need to educate our kids in a manner that they appreciate. And we're not doing that. And that's why we're so poor at education, because we're all about metrics, but they're the wrong damn metrics. So once we get the games into the classroom, the games industry is going to absolutely explode. And so I was really enamored with it. And I was like, gosh, what, the average private investment in the game industry yields a 700% return in 3 years? I'm like, that's the industry I want to get into. So I look back at virtual entrepreneur and all the, and everything else, and I was never really able to break that barrier with VE, because I was just a lone wolf. And so I said, well, I need to put a team together. So I put together an amazing team of individuals, and then I put together a talent pool. I mean, I looked at the things that the game industry needs, and, you know, the aspiring studio heads, because they don't understand anything about entrepreneurship. They just think, oh, I love playing games, now I'm going to make them, and then I'm going to make money making them. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. There's a big chasm between playing games and making them, but the chasm between making them and making money making them is even bigger, believe it or not. So, and honestly, they just got to get out of their own way. So the reasons why they don't do well is that they're focused on making games they want to sell, which is not necessarily a game that you want to buy. And then they don't plan. But planning to them, Sir John Havre Jones, look him up. He was like the guru of business back in England, back in the 80s and 90s. And he had a great saying. He says, the wonderful thing about not planning is that failure comes as a complete surprise. Okay. And he says, whereas those who plan, failure is preceded by a period of worry, anxiety, despair, et cetera, you know. And then he says, fail to plan, plan to fail. And what people don't realize, it's like, wait a minute. If you've got time to despair before you fail, you've got time to fix things so you don't fail. And so I go after, I look at these independent game developers and it's like, wait a minute here. They're the vast majority of the people producing content for the game industry. Okay. And like I said, it's $110 billion now, and it's growing at an average of 10% a year for the last 20 years, recession or no. And where's that $70 billion in growth going to come from in the next 5 years if 95% fail to break even? And so I was like, that we really need to help these companies understand, these studios understand what it takes to be a good entrepreneur. And I do it from a project management viewpoint. And so that's what we do. So we put together a huge talent pool of over 500 people. Well, not 500 yet, but getting close. And so we have the artists and the designers and the programmers and everybody else that they need in order to have the capacity to create their game experiences in a reasonable period of time. Because the average game takes 3 to 5 years to develop. And I'm like, why? It shouldn't take more than 6 to 12 months, right? Just put more people on the job. And then we're all entrepreneurs. So nobody, including myself, unfortunately, gets paid until the game sells. And because you've got to understand risk and initiative, if you're not willing to risk utilize the risk or initiative necessary to be successful, then don't bother. And, like I said, we have a couple dozen people on our team now that are just absolute world class. So when a new company comes to us with their intellectual property that we want to have as part of our portfolio, and we tell them, look, if the guy who designed Assassin's Creed tells you that you need to change the color of something or change the gameplay of something, you better do it, right? But they get to keep all their intellectual property and their creative freedom, which they don't get to do with the other publishers. And so we've developed this model that allows that's we believe is revolutionary. And in fact, a Silicon Valley firm group tried to steal our model about 3 years ago when they found out about us, and then they failed after 5 months and $7.2 million. But there are a couple larger, more established publishers that are also starting to try my model. But in any case, we're just trying to help them understand what it means to be an entrepreneur and be a successful entrepreneur, do it right the first time, and create great game experiences. So right now we've got, like I said, we've got close to 500 people in our talent pool. We have a couple dozen advisors, about 30 people on the team. And it fluctuates between 50 and 100 people that are actively working on multiple projects for multiple startups. So, and we're looking for more product. And then of course we're raising capital to, get to market these products. So yeah, I don't sleep much.
All right. So cool. So you're out in the world, you're building, helping build games and simulations. And you see this vision of the game industry even getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So you're currently looking for more projects to build. Right. And potential capital partners to help you build that. So let's start with the first half. Okay. What kind of projects have you guys built already? Talk to me about some of the projects that you're working on. Any success stories or shout outs that you could give? Like, give us an idea of what you've worked on.
Well, we uh, the first few years of this, honestly, I was, it was more of a hobby than anything else, because I was just, you know, I retired several times and I hated it all three times. And so I was trying to find a convenient place to, like, not be retired, but not be working like a dog, like crazy, like I've been doing since I was 20. But, so about a year and a half ago, I need to really start taking things seriously. So, started looking for capital and raise some investment. We've been paying ROI ever since. The thing is these, we had one company that signed up right away called Major Games, and they were from, based on some former students from my, game design master's degree program course, project management course. And we have multiple titles, in the pipeline from them. One of them was Bit Evolution, and Bit Evolution is exactly what it sounds like. It's, you start out as a Pong puck. And as you progress through the game, you go through an Atari-like world, then a Game Boy-like world, then a Nintendo-like world, and then a Super Nintendo-like world. So you and the game evolves as you play through the game. And we got it out in less than 6 months, and it was favorably reviewed by PewDiePie with like 50 million subscribers, except that it was done under false pretenses, and I won't go into that, but... we were not able to capitalize on that, unfortunately. We also got a really good review from IGN, which was the biggest, one of the biggest media outlets in the game industry, including, well, one of my advisors is actually one of the founders of it. And they gave us an 8.1, which is like, you know, we're not worthy type of a thing in the independent game industry. Because you got to understand, the people who review independent games review the triple, you know, the $300 million games with the same eye. So when you get an 8.1, you know, and then their $500 million game got an 8.2, you're really happy, right? So in any case, and we've done about 67,000 units of that game so far. And then we've got multiple iterations of the game getting ready to come out. And then we have... another game that we've been testing very well, that's tested very well, called Not Without You. It's a puzzle game, a brain teaser that we want to get into the schools. But our target market is basically the casual gamer, the casual mobile gamer. And in our surveys, it's got a 94% approval rating. So, you know, 94% will tell their, recommend it to their friends. So I'm like, yeah, that sounds good to me. So we're trying to get that out. Going to do a soft launch on that fairly soon, and then start rolling it out worldwide and so forth. We have another game called Vectro Mirror, which is a completely different game from the other two. Well, so Bit Evolution is what we call a 2D retro platformer. The Not Without You is a puzzle brain teaser, and a mobile puzzle brain teaser, and then Vectro Mirror is a first person, in other words, you're looking at it through the eyes of the game player, and it's a 3D, so it's got depth and everything like that, but we call it a parkour exploration game. So you're almost like Spider-Man in the Tron universe. And so you're doing wall crawling and jumping and you're leaping, and the environment is changing as you're moving through it. And we've done a little bit of testing on it, and it just literally blew people away. So, well, maybe not literally, but it was really, really well received. So we're looking forward to getting that out. And then we have about eight titles right now that we're working on, and each release on a different platform is a different product because it's different coding and everything else like that. So we've got about three dozen products that we're trying to get out in the next 24 months. So just, you know, right now we're just, everything's coming together slowly but surely, but everything's coming together, and the teams and the people and the capital and everything else. So we're hoping to have a very good year this year.
Awesome. So you've been doing this for a while, helping build and launch products and helping other people put the plans and the processes behind these so that they could grow and scale and right. actually get to marketplace, right? Yeah. And you've been paying an ROI to those who have been invested in this since you started this program, right?
Well, a year ago, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty awesome. Before we get in the investment side of this, is there anybody in the marketplace that you worked with that you want to give a shout out to, that you want to thank, that you want to highlight, someone specific that they're doing something interesting, and it could be in your group too. Is there anybody that you really want to lift up on the show?
Well, our two marketing guys, my marketing director is John Hansen, and we got him from EA's global marketing group. And he almost single-handedly took their Madden NFL mobile game from out of the toilet and made it a nine-figure game in like 8 months. And then Neil Haldar is our chief marketing officer and as a consultant. And Neil helped start a company called GREE, G-R-E-E. And basically he took it from nothing to $500 million. And now it's like almost $700 million. And so he's going to do the same for us. So we've got the marketing chutzpah and the team, and we're just looking for the financing to be able to market our games and to do exactly what he did with GREE. So those are the two guys that I would shout out to at the moment.
Okay. So now let's transition into, you know, like as you guys are looking for capital partners, you know, like what kind of people should be or could be interested in this? And, you know, what kind of people, because you want the right partners with this, but what kind of people would you really love to see be a part of this platform with you?
Well, I'll tell you the types of people that have been investing in us, and they're basically people who have been entrepreneurs and or love the entrepreneur lifestyle and what we stand for as far as, you know, economic development and jobs and so forth, and intellectual property and such. And typically, though, that they've been entrepreneurs, they've got a business that's doing about $1 million to $5 million a year. They haven't really invested in a startup before, so they don't really know how. And there's thousands of these people just in Central Florida, by the way. And they don't know anything about games because go figure, it's bigger. It's far bigger than the worldwide film and TV industry, but nobody knows about investing in it. So what we do is we say, look, we've got a one-page executive summary. We hand it out to them and they say, wow, you know, you're basically, you know, offering, you know, the average is 700% in 3 years, and I've got to do better than that. Because of our model, because it's so new that it, you know, we're definitely way out of people's comfort zone, so to speak. But then we're paying an ROI, so it's like, and I don't want to misspeak because our ROI is almost negligible, but it's better than a CD for crying out loud. So I don't know of any other startups in town that are paying an ROI, you know, that are even 3 or 5 years old. So it's basically a royalty type of a deal. And we're not asking for millions of dollars right now because we're still trying to prove our model. So it doesn't make sense to me to you know, provide equity for a company that hasn't proven its model yet. Nor does it make sense to me to, you know, to get millions of dollars for, you know, again, an unproven model. So I want to bring them in at a low, where it's easy for them, right? If it doesn't work out, they don't take the kids to Disney this year. It's like, that's what we're talking about, right? So, but then once we prove our model, then, and we've already had a couple of investors reinvest, but once we prove our model, then we can go after the millions. But then now we're in a much stronger position to ask for that money and can do better deals for our investors and for our stakeholders because of that. So, because I believe in doing it right the first time, and to me that doesn't mean a flash in the pan. I want to be around for five. We want to create 50 to 100 sustainable companies in the next 5 years. And so we're not going to be able to do that by just taking the money and running like most people do. So I hope that answers your question.
Awesome. Yeah. So, as you're here building in Orlando and, you know, building a bunch of sustainable businesses through gaming, which I think is incredible. As you're building here, talk to us about Orlando as an ecosystem and some of the things that you think that we're doing really well and maybe some areas that we can improve upon as a community.
Well, the things that we're doing really well are, in spite of the powers that be, so to speak, you know, Orlando's a world center. You know, when I say world center, I mean for humanity's sake. In like 9 different tech sectors. Okay. We're number one by a long shot in modeling and simulation. We're very strong in, a group of my friends just did a mega health jam. So, you know, medical engineering, medical technology, things like that. Very strong here in Orlando. Sensors. Very strong. Advanced computing, advanced manufacturing, now automotive automation, with that new automotive facility that's going out there. And it's just, people think that we're all about oranges and mice, okay? And the thing is we've got billion. I mean, we're talking between those 9 industries, you know, we're bringing, hell, digital media is $14 billion in the state of Florida, and Orlando's accounting for half of it. And it's like, you know, people don't know this. And so that those are the things that we're doing right. The things that we're not doing right is the fact that people don't know about this. And the reason they don't know about this, and I think Mayor Dyer, you know, kind of is kind of dancing around the issue, but he's got the idea. You know, he came up with this "You Don't Know the Half of It" campaign, and I'm like, well, the thing that we really need to do is that we have, sitting within 100 miles of where I'm sitting now in Winter Park, there are 500,000 post-secondary students. Okay, 500,000. All right, they're not just studying, you know, humanities and arts, which are important. They're also studying engineering, computer engineering, electrical engineering, physics, math, all these other things that we desperately need in the tech industry in this country. And the thing is they're leaving. And there's a tremendous brain drain. I had a conversation with one of my former students a few years ago, and I was talking to him, and he's in San Francisco. And you got to understand, the average compensation in the game industry is $97,000 a year. Okay, that's the average. And it's like, that includes secretaries and admin people and so forth. So, not saying that they make that, but you don't understand. So I'm talking to him. I said, "Don't you miss Orlando?" And he goes, "Why?" And I said, "Well, what about all your friends?" And I can hear him standing up, and he goes, "There's Kate, there's Jose, there's Julius, there's Chris, there's, you know," and he lists off 9 other people that were in my class. And I'm thinking to myself, holy crap, that's $1 million of economic development that we lost in one room, in one building, in one city, in one state, not in Orlando. Can you imagine what the brain drain is costing this city and this region? You know, otherwise. So, and you know, the $1 million budget that we have to tell the world that they don't know the half of it. I mean, Nashville's what, 2.5 million? It's like, wait a minute. We need to put together a $5 million budget and get private industry involved. Why does the mayor have to foot the bill, for crying out loud? There's plenty of money here. Get private industry involved, put together a $5 million program. If I had the money, I'd do it. And go after the students and say, listen, you want to live here. Why do you want to go? I had another student say, you know, he was leaving. He was going to San Francisco. And I said, why? And he says, well, this company here in town offered me $80,000, but San Francisco offered me $150,000. And I said, Let me let you in on a little secret. I said, for you to live in San Francisco with the same quality of life that you would have in Orlando for $80,000, you would need to be earning over $200,000 a year. Good luck living in your closet. So the guy's making $150,000 a year and he's living with three other roommates in a two-bedroom apartment, right, that they could barely afford, and they're eating pizza and Mountain Dew, okay? And I'm like, if they were in Orlando, if he was living in Orlando for $80,000, he'd have his own apartment, if not his own house, you know? he'd be eating in what Wallet Hub called this, one of the top foodie cities in the country and one of the most dynamic cities in the country, and our art scene is going absolutely bonkers, and performing arts and fine arts and everything. And just and what, $20 billion in construction and development projects going on, including the, you know, the I-4 thing and whatever. I mean, come on, why wouldn't not anybody want to stay here? So we need to be, instead of marketing to the 68 million people that are already coming here, we need to market to the people that are here and keep them from leaving. So that would be my two cents on what we can do right.
Awesome. So it sounds like you're extremely passionate about entrepreneurship. You're trying to build a community of gamers and those who support the gaming industry. You want to build sustainable businesses through gaming and through education, and you want to help partner with capital partners to help fund these missions and to give them a great opportunity of something that you see and that the world sees as a very booming and growing industry.
Yeah, and provide them with far better investment opportunities than what we've been saying. Yeah.
Awesome. So the name of your the company is Burnout Game Ventures. Yep. Where could people go to find out more information about you and about your company?
All I have to do is just Google me, Rupert Megnaught, or Google Burnout Game Ventures. Of course, we have websites and we have social presence and all that, but the best thing is just to Google us.
Okay, cool. Rupert, thanks for coming and talking with us about, you know, processes and talking about the background of Orlando and how it's growing and booming and casting some vision for us on the future of gaming and education and in this community. Is there anything that you want to talk about that we maybe didn't hit that you want to touch on?
Not off the top of my head. I mean, we can just always have another conversation, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, good.
I do want to say that, you know, the group that you and I are part of, Orlando Entrepreneurs, is to me something that's really, I've been waiting for quite a while, because we need, you know, been running 1 million cups, which is, you know, the Kauffman Foundation's thing, for about a year and a half. And RC Williams and Juliana Ramon have been running that for the last year. And been doing a great job, and because we see two entrepreneurs presentations every single week. We've had over 750 presentations there at Rollins College every Wednesday morning. So I would encourage anybody interested in entrepreneurship to check that out, because there's no other place in Central Florida you can do that. So I think there is one in Sanford though, and so. Orlando Entrepreneurs, 1 million cups. We do have a vibrant entrepreneurial community here, especially with the accelerators everybody's reading about. But it's fractured. Everybody needs to be working together. You know, these accelerators and incubators, for example, consider each other, you know, competitors. And I'm like, wait a minute, there's no competition in helping people, right? So let's all work together. Let's support good organizations like Orlando Entrepreneurs, and which in turn, it's a win-win situation. We got to help each other, you know, scratch my back, I scratch yours type of a thing. So let's all work together. Let's collaborate, and let's really show the world what Orlando can really do.
Awesome. And you mentioned some really great names and some really great resources here. So, you know, we'll add these in the show notes. So if people here are in Orlando and they would like to check out one of these events, one of these programs, or connect with some of the people that Rupert mentioned, just go to the show notes and you'll be able to click on it and go straight to that. So guys, thank you for thank you for, you know, coming in and listening into the show from one of the greats here in Orlando, one of the great mentors and pro advocates of entrepreneurship. Rupert, thank you for coming on the show and sharing your passion, knowledge, and wisdom with this community. We really appreciate you.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah. And those listening in, thank you for joining us on this show, the Orlando Entrepreneurs Show. You can find out more information at orlandoentrepreneurs.org. So guys, until the next episode, we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.